You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Sure takes the joy out of being thoroughly filthy, disgustingly rich, doesn't it?
I'm really disappointed because I thought this was the long-lost seven-hour cut of Von Stroheim's Greed, but apparently it's a completely different movie called Greed.
That's One of Us with all those very, very topical jokes. I love you, Marco. Only you would make that joke, maybe Bo.
Maybe it wouldn't have been funnier. It would have just been louder.
True. But we are talking about Greed, the new film by Michael Winterbottom, who always, even love or hate his films, they're always very interesting. And sure enough, he's teamed up with Steve Coogan yet again, which he works with quite a bit. Almost all his films, it seems like.
Quite a few of them, for sure.
Yeah.
It's his De Niro.
The good ones.
But I'm Chris.
Sarah Jane.
Mindy.
Marco.
And yeah, we were all more or less excited to see this thing. I would have been even more excited if I had realized that David Mitchell was one of the main stars here, who my lovely wife turned me onto the show Peep Show with me, a certain amount of me grumbling about, because I'm not as big into the British sitcoms where everybody's a total prick usually, but I admit that show is fantastic.
I didn't like Peep Show, but that Mitchell and Webb look where it's just a British
sketch comedy.
Yeah. That stuff you binge watch, except the very last skit. Avoid it. It will make you cry.
What? Oh, okay. Jeez. I never watched all of it. I mainly know.
And
the,
now you have something
your wife
to look
is
forward
nodding.
To.
Nodding. She knows.
I mainly know the Are We the Baddies sketch.
The Baddies is the first one, and you're like, oh, this is amazing.
But Greed is definitely a satire about a very rich billionaire, completely
as opposed to the poor billionaire.
Yeah, but a billionaire who is not one of those Warren Buffett types. He's one of those flaunt it, I'm an asshole, fuck everyone else but me types.
Specifically in regards to the garment industry, he's a big fashion mogul.
Played by Steve Coogan, and he's getting ready to celebrate his 60th birthday. We see, as the film goes back and forth through time, showing different periods, eventually we kind of figure out, okay, he's in trouble with the press. It's come out that...
And money. He's in a lot of debt.
Yeah, he's in a lot of debt, but also it's one of those ways in that billionaires can be in a lot of debt and end up making more money.
Yeah.
You know, where they bankrupt business after business, but they come out of it richer somehow.
And they actually go into how that works.
They do.
They do. It's a lot of information that gets dumped in your face. So.
But so they're explaining that is the press has really turned against him, calling him like Sir Greedy McGreedy. His last name is McCready. And he decides, okay, we have to make this birthday party an event. We'll get a lot of famous people to come out. We'll do it on the island of Mykonos in Greece, which is absolutely gorgeous, of course, and perfect. And we're going to make it sort of a Roman thing, which right off the bat, you can tell this guy cannot read the room.
He loves Gladiator, so he wants to be based on Gladiator.
Yeah, he like raised his kids being all into the movie Gladiator, and just like, he's one of those guys who is not as smart as he likes to think he is. Yes. Like, he loves to give these quotes like that sound smart, but they reveal at one point he literally has an app that's called Brainy Quote that he gets quotes from. And he's running around this island, basically treating absolutely everybody like shit. Nothing is really working out the way it's supposed to. And in the midst of all this madness is David Mitchell, who is a poor, befuddled version of the character we've seen David Mitchell play many times before. He's kind of wormy.
Memoir writer, something along
He's
lines.
Been hired by them to write a biography of him. And he's having a harder and harder time making his peace with trying to put out this puff piece biography, because it's become very clear to him that this guy is an outrageous prick. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of following his story, even though I wouldn't call him the primary character. I mean, Coogan is still definitely the primary character in the story.
He's the narrator of the story.
In a way, without voiceovers.
Yeah.
You know, but he's definitely the everyman looking in from the outside. Isla Fisher. Is Isla or Isla? I think it's Isla, right?
I believe it's Isla.
Is it Isla? Well, she plays his ex-wife, even though it's clear that, like, they're only kind of divorced. Like, well, it looks like they got divorced for tax reasons.
Well, no, she said that, you know, they got divorced because he needed a trophy wife. And so she's much younger, prettier, but so she's there for show. It's like, look at this arm candy I've got. But, you know, the relationship is still between the two.
Yeah, and she's clearly not deeply offended by all this. To her, it's all just business.
Yeah, the trophy wife barely has any words in the whole movie. So it's like she's very much just supposed to be eye candy.
So yeah, there's lots of madness going on all at the same time. You have like Asa Butterfield as one of the youngest kid of the family who nobody seems to particularly like very much. And he's very...
he's the Tiffany.
He's very dour and angry at the way he's been treated. There's the older sister, yes. Shirley Henderson. I think it's Shirley Henderson.
No, Shirley Henderson plays his mother.
Oh, it plays the mother. I'm sorry. Right if, when we see her at first, she's wearing old age makeup. I'm like, there's no way she's that old. She's
no. She's delightful.
But she has to play the character in two different ages, so.
Sophie Cookson, who played Lancelot in Kingsman, the Secret Service, it plays the older sister who is... At the same time as all this is going on, is also the star of a reality show about her life, even though it's completely scripted.
It's so great. It's so great.
They're constantly trying to film these emotional sequences between her and her not actually boyfriend.
But she's method, so it kind of is.
It's a lovely scene. She's crying, oh, I think we're breaking up, to her mom. And she's like, wait, I thought this was just for the show. It is, but I'm method. You're like, why are you talking to me then? there's a lot of lovely moments like that throughout this film, and there's a lot of moments that are funny, very few laugh-out-loud moments, but a lot of chuckles consistently through here with Coogan with his usual sort of like, I'm an asshole, but I'm a funny asshole type of character that he always plays.
Which
with
is
Mitchell,
hard to do.
Mitchell squirming his way through every scene as he's the guy who never really knows what to say, is always completely perpetually out of place no matter where he is. I mean, the only difference between him here and him in other parts he plays is that at his core he seems like he's probably a good person. But he does not belong here, and he knows it.
Yes. Yeah. There's also Danita Goley, an actress I'm not familiar with. I believe she plays Amanda. She is a... We were actually talking about that, what her actual role was. She's one of many, many people who is working on this project, and we find out that she has some backstory that involves the Coogan characters... sweatshops in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, and, she's very much the connection to the lower classes. Like, she's the one... some of the characters are refugees that have happened to land on the beach that's nearby this party. So she's like... I wouldn't say every man, but she's the common man.
She's almost the Amanda de Armas character in this movie, to kind of compare it to something like, you know, Knives Out, where you have that... member of the working class who's been thrown into this bizarre world of ultra rich people. And she's kind of our anchor in the sense that, you know, she's our moral compass, but it doesn't spend a lot of time with her. It spends, like you said, more time with the David Mitchell
character.
She's
a moral compass that you don't even realize is that until close to the end of the film. Yeah. Like a lot of these characters, it's not really clear what purpose they're serving in the bigger story and the arc of this thing till really the last 10 or 15 minutes of the film. They're just one of the many, many characters running around this film that you're uncertain what their ultimate purpose is. And I think that's one of the real problems here, ultimately, is there's too many plates spinning at once. There's too many characters. Winterbottom, you can see everything he's trying to do, but he's trying to do too much. I mean, the Asa Butterfield character in particular and his whole arc, which he keeps trying to insert this Greek Oedipus thing into, but he's like trying to insert it in with a crowbar. Right. It just doesn't work.
Well, it's like at the end, you know, after the main storytelling, it goes into during the beginning of the credits, all these different factoids that relate to the film. But the thing is, these factoids are very... varied, and that's part of it. I mean, it reminded me of, there's a book that I have called Batman the Ace of
I was wondering how you were going to bring Batman.
Hell yeah, I'm going to bring Batman into
it's almost like Michael Rioas is here.
Another horrible rich billionaire who's wasted his money.
You shut your face, I will punch it. But
you know, instead of eradicating the roots of crime and poverty in Gotham, he beats up a bugger a night.
He's a philanthropist. Yeah. You shut your face. Anyway, but there's this book called Batman the Ultimate Evil, which
which is Batman.
But yeah. But it was written by a crime author who is also a child abuse lawyer. And it focuses on child prostitution in Southeast Asia. And that thing with the credits immediately took me to, at the end of this book, there's a page that goes, Batman is fiction, the ultimate evil is not. And it goes on into a report about child prostitution in Thailand. And it felt very much that. And I thought that was very clever in the, here is a fictional story. And all right, now you've digested some of what I'm trying to tell you in the grand scheme of things in a fictional way so that there is a wall so that you can, you're more inclined to take it in. All right, now you have that. Now here are the facts to concrete them in your brain about how, why this is important that I'm telling the story. And I thought it was good that the movie fictionalized it and made it comedic because that's more easy to process. But at the same time, there was so much to process because it had things, you know, and at the end, when they're trying to sum it up of why this is important, it goes to, well, here's stuff about refugees. Here's stuff about sweatshops. Here's stuff about wage inequality. Here's stuff about, you know, the difference between men and women in regards to financial equality. And it's just like, okay, pick a theme and focus on it. Well, pick a theme and focus.
Part of it, it was doubling down on something with a movie that was already so incredibly on the nose with everything it was saying. There was almost no need to do that.
We already
know all this from watching your movie. And I think it was you, Marco, was saying that, like, originally this was supposed to have more specifically, this person is definitely based on this person in real life.
He named a little bit more names. The Steve Coogan character is apparently based somewhat loosely on a guy named Sir Philip Green. And, you know, he's been in a lot of trouble over the years. He also had a huge blowout party that caused some controversy. And, you know, he's just one of these guys who manages to always get richer, even as the companies he owns get run into the ground, get laden with debt, get laid off. And yet somehow this guy always manages to just, you know, land on his feet and somehow avoid paying a whole hell of a lot of taxes. And this is the Steve. I can actually imagine
taxes.
Michael Winterbottom.
No one in there pays taxes. Don't you know that's what the wife said?
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. That's why rich people think they're smart, because they do these things that, you know, no one realizes, oh, you can do that. If you have enough fuck you money, you can do whatever you want, and you pay less than other people, you get better deals, and no one says no to you. And this is kind of you can feel Michael Winterbottom's rage. That's one of the problems with the movie. It's a righteous anger that suffuses the entire work, yet he's trying to be funny, he's trying to be satirical. He's got the vapid sort of, you know, teenage daughter who's doing the, you know, meta narrative within the fictionalized reality TV show. There are, as Chris said, a lot of plates going on here. This felt like a Robert Altman movie, except everybody waited to let other people finish talking, which made it seem longer. Because Altman could do, you know, three conversations and two subplots all happening at the same time.
It did feel
in less than 2 hours, certainly. This actually really dragged
it. Chaos of Altman's film gives it a sense of naturalism that makes it seem that much more real. Here, it definitely felt like much like the reality show inside of it, like a scripted product. It was hard to completely connect it to any sort of righteous anger. It was hard to make that mesh, and maybe that's why, because it felt so scripted, make that mesh with the comedy that's there. Yeah. It's like he's trying to make an Iannucci type of thing with that sort of very cynical type of political or social strata humor that's very on the surface and very brash. But the story and what it's really talking about is so incredibly fucking dark and angry. Yeah. Those two things never completely fuse in a way that makes the whole thing palatable. I kept thinking, it was like Wolf of Wall Street if it was A, British, and B, wanted to constantly remind you every time you were starting to have fun, don't have fun. What's wrong with you? People are suffering.
On the plus side, it's not 3 hours long.
Yeah.
I will say that the structure of the film was really engaging, because I thought it was really interesting and clever the way they made it kind of like the documentary that the guy was making. So it's like you have the setup to the 5 days before this party, but then something will happen and it will connect it to, you know, years ago at the sweatshop. It will connect it to the court trial that this guy is going through. But, and it did it in a way to me that felt seamless, because it's like, okay, here we go. Here's the backstory in order to connect it to this point in time. And in order to get that overload of information, albeit there was too much of an overload of information, but that certainly did help in the movement of the story, albeit with a heavy ass backpack on your
back. Was interesting. I kept thinking during those, and it was like, and it worked in the context of the film. I don't disagree with you, but I kept thinking, this feels all of a sudden like a heist movie, because that's like such a heist movie technique to do that. I kept expecting them to start playing bright, fun music like Cake or something, you know, during those sequences and be like,
well, they got Fat Boy Slim.
Yeah, they did have Fat Boy Slim.
I like the flashback to when he was really young. That was almost more interesting to me.
Oh, when he was.
I wanted to see more of that story.
Yeah, I did. That whoever was playing him as a young guy was really good.
Yeah, it does go back that far when he was in school and his relationship with his mom, who completely took his side, despite the fact he was just a complete prick even back then.
Yeah.
I mean, they keep talking about, like, his whole life. Here was a guy who was just, I mean, he is the title. He is greed personified. He is going to do exactly what he wants to do, when he wants to do. He knows how to do it. He bullies everyone around him into getting what he wants, and he does have that weird thing, like, how did that guy get blessed with that much luck? You know, just shit tons of luck to keep being able to get away with
balls
it.
Balls that hang on the ground. That's what.
Yeah,
it
that dude
like.
Walked
well,
into
it's
that.
It's amazing what you can do when you have no shame.
Yeah,
that is true.
That dude walked into that meeting with the government figures interrogating him about his finances with a wheelbarrow just to carry those steel balls in.
Right.
You know, because they required just to get them in through the door. I think that it is not much of a stretch for Coogan to be playing this character at all, although I felt bad for him. He's wearing these really, like, this fake, ridiculously white teeth that clearly were not a very comfortable fit. You could see them pushing out in his mouth, and he looked like he was actually distinctly uncomfortable wearing them. I couldn't tear my eyes away from whenever he was on screen. But he is supposed to be kind of like hideously fake. He's like a fake.
The wife comments on the fact that they're fake.
Yeah, they're that big on purpose.
Yeah. But let's go into final thoughts. Mindy, why don't you get us started?
Well, I rather enjoyed it. Like I said, the structure of the film made the movement of it very engaging in regards to why things were happening and how that fit in the context of this character. As we said, one of the big drawbacks is that it is a I'm going to send you a message film, while trying also to be engaging. And in turn, there was a lot of information dumps that in some cases went by very fast, and in a lot of them just added weight to your backpack as you were trudging along. But that said, the character's really engaging. I loved the older sister's reality show. I was always excited when it came on. the one thing, other than this, just how heavy all this information dump was also the Deus Ex Machina of the ending, which was kind of a Rube Goldberg series of events that led up to, you know, not spoiler, but it was like, after all this reality of, you know, albeit entertaining realities of this is the way that this guy's an asshole, this is the way that the garment industry works, this is the way that he gets away with all this essentially legal bribery, et cetera, and so forth, to have that Deus Ex Machina ending, while foreshadowing does not necessarily mean smooth transition. And it was just like, really? Okay. But other than that, I mean, it's a really enjoyable film. And so I would recommend it, certainly. So I'm going to say,
Dead air is always fun.
No, I was like, do I give a fraction? Shut up. So I'm going to say, honestly, 8 coked out lions out of 10.
Sarah Jane.
I generally like Steve Coogan and Michael Winterbottom together. This is probably, though, my least favorite of theirs. It was fine. I did have some laughs. There wasn't a whole lot of laughter in the theater. You and I think, were probably...
I think we laughed harder than anybody else.
Yeah.
But this is definitely... I think we share this type of humor being particularly appealing to us.
Yeah, yeah.
So And even us, we weren't, like, cracking up.
No.
We were chuckling.
No. So, all the acting is great. The film looked great. I mean, I didn't have any problem with that. It was just that there were, and I always like to quote Amadeus, it's just too many notes. There were a lot of things going on. If they hadn't focused, I mean, you know, they had the sweatshops and the refugees. And so it just seemed like it was really forced. But I didn't have a problem with the ending because it, I mean, they forced it down your throat that everything was all connected. So I did like the soundtrack, though. There was some really good stuff, especially in when they were back in the 70s. That stuff was really good.
I mean, ABBA's amazing.
Any movie that takes place in the 70s is going to have, by definition, good soundtrack stuff in it.
That's why I wanted to spend more time there. I'll recommend it, but, you know, it's just... I'm iffy on it. I'm going to give it just 7 bloody togas out of 10.
Marco.
I mean, we covered a lot of this already, I think, but there is an inconsistency of tone that he never quite nails. At times it is a sort of thrilling throwback, almost Scorsese-esque, you know, rise and fall of a young grifter in the swinging 70s London. But then it becomes like a heavy-handed sort of, you know, commentary piece, and then it becomes, you know, a broad satirical thing, and then it's a meta-narrative, you know, with the reality show. There's a whole lot of stuff going on, and this feels like it's 2 hours long, and it's only 104 minutes. I was actually surprised when I got to your house, because, like, oh my God.
I did the same thing.
It's only 9. It's like, I've been driving for a few minutes. I thought the movie got out at 9. Mm-hmm. It felt like 2 hours. As much as I found things to enjoy about it, there's maybe one or too many, one subplot or one character too many. There was so much to work with. I feel like this is still a draft or two away from being really good. And a lot of the subtext should have just remained subtext instead of literally making it text at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is some fun to be had here. It is a gorgeous film to look at. You can go, oh, wow, that's how the rich people live. I'll never know what that's like. But, yeah, I wanted this to be better because it's the right team to do this, and it's a really interesting way to explore this theme. Kind of a lost opportunity in my book. I'm going to have to give this 7 out of 10 stolen bags of cutlery.
There's too many great ideas in this film. That's the biggest problem. There's a lot of great ideas and not enough time to execute them. This is, and I know that I say this probably way too often, but this is a thing that should have been like a miniseries, not a movie, because there's so many characters that you're like, oh, there's so many ways they could go to tell the story, be more interesting. Like Asa Butterfield's character, who definitely feels like in a draft before this had actually something to do and is definitely a big part of the denouement of the film. Yeah. You're like, but we know next to nothing about this character. What, he's literally almost a prop, and he so figures heavily into the end of the thing, especially both in the plot and in the film's final, like, you know, judgment. I found so many moments I'm like, yeah, this is just unfinished because you didn't have enough time to tell the story with all the pieces you chose to include in it. It felt like one of those, somebody had to sit down and go, you need to cut out half of these characters and these stories and just focus on this stuff because they get it. You have a lot of great ideas, but sometimes too much is too much. And that really is ultimately the thing that hurts us the most. Also hurt, like I said, by the fact that it is, I'm with Winterbottom. I'm righteously indignantly angry about the same things you are when it comes to the inequality of the rich to the poor and the way that they regularly are able to get away with just fucking us all over. And that's, nothing has been done to change that at all, and it's not going to probably change anytime soon. I get it, and we need more films exploring this. I mean, Parasite was a great example of a film exploring this sort of thing this year, and wasn't even the only one. Nope. You know,
it's a very popular theme right now.
Right, and getting into the how does this work? Why does it work the way it does? How did we even get here? But this is just too much at once, and its tone is all over the place. There's a lot of stuff here that I admire, but not much I actually like, and that's the difference here. That's why at the end I come down going, I'm glad I saw it, but I can't say I totally enjoyed it. It's a misfire of a movie that should be a lot better than it is, considering how many great performances there are, how many great like bits of scripting there are in this, how many great ideas there are, and it just never comes together. I'm going to give this 6.5 out of 10. That giant yachts that, despite everything I just said, I would still murder all of you to own. I'm just saying, if someone right now is like, kill them all and that yacht is yours, I'm like, well, guys, it's been nice.
The reality is, you know, 3 hours in, he'd go, I'm bored with this yacht.
Probably. Yeah. Can I have a red sports car now?
I want to go inside now.
I want a Batmobile.